Welcome to the Human Advisor Podcast. This series is brought to you by Altruist, a digital platform that helps remove the friction from managing money and enables financial advisors to do their best work. Find your human advisor, or if you're an advisor, learn how Altruist can help you serve your clients better at altruist.com/podcast.
In this episode of The Human Advisor, Altruist CEO Jason Wenk and Bill McNabb, former CEO of Vanguard, discuss how the emerging advisor can grow their practices through principles that they've used to build their business. You do not want to miss this conversation. Tune in.
Getting on the phones and talking to them, reading the emails, actually exchanging letters. I did all this even as CEO because it kept me connected. The most important principle for me, besides integrity in all things, is it's not my money, it's their money.
To my right, I have CEO of Altruist, Jason Wenk. To my left, former Vanguard CEO, Bill McNabb. How are you both doing?
Fantastic. Great to be here.
I talk to a lot of advisors, and when I talk to them, and if they do come from humble beginnings, they are finding that wealth isn't just monetary, right? You can get wealth in the form of hard work, in the form of good principles, and building a strong character, and watching your parents and your community do these things, right? For you, Bill, you talked about education. How important was that, and how did that lead you into getting into finance?
Yeah, so the education emphasis in my household was really strong. And the idea was you should always be learning. Mm-hmm. And that was like something drilled into me pretty early on. And that's actually been an incredibly important part of my whole career, is just this constant learning. And, you know, what was interesting is when I was an undergrad, I went to college thinking I was going to play basketball. The coaches actually thought differently.
Really?
And so,
I mean, I couldn't tell. They would think differently.
Well, you know, I was not big enough to be a really good power forward and not quick enough to be a good point guard. So I was kind of a tweener. So my roommates talked me into going out for the rowing team. Okay. And I'd never seen a rowing shell. I didn't know what it was. And that ended up being pretty life-changing because I learned a lot about teamwork and a lot about hard work, to Jason's point. But this education thing was still very much part of my mantra. So my first job out of school actually was teaching. I taught at a boys' school. I taught classics of all things, first year Latin. I think the reason I was hired is because I could coach three sports. So I was actually pretty cheap. And I think the head of the school really liked that. And it was that focus on education. And after a couple of years of doing that, you know, I was thinking about going back to school, and I looked at a whole range of different things. And I had a little bit of a kick in the backside from a friend of mine saying, you know, you ought to at least look at the business world a little bit. And that led me to Wharton. And Wharton's here in Philly where we're doing this. And that just turned out to be a great accident for me. I went into the Wharton school not really knowing anything. And I'd never taken an accounting course. I didn't know anything about finance. I had some basic macroeconomics. And then I discovered the whole world of finance and, you know, fell in love with it. And interestingly, it was that love of finance that actually got me to Vanguard, originally. But also, again, I'm going to keep coming back to this education theme. It was one of my former coaches and, you know, really great mentors and teachers who talked me into taking a look at Vanguard. I was working at Wall Street at the time, and he kept talking about being part of something bigger, not just being in it for yourself. And again, that really appealed to me. And so, you know, I ended up leaving Wall Street, coming to Vanguard and starting pretty low on the totem pole. I did get a chance, though, when I was interview with our iconic founder, Jack Bogle. That was something.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, 2-hour interview with Jack. My wife, I remember, said to me afterwards, you know, what did you, you know, how did it go? I said, I have no idea. I said, he took me in so many different directions. And she goes, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, if I get the job, I'm going to take it. And, you know, the rest is sort of history.
That's awesome. When you talk about building something bigger, that's how I feel about Altruist, actually. But curiosity was a theme that I heard, right? Yeah. Being curious. Can you both talk about how young advisors or any advisors should stay curious as they build their practices? I think that's important, to be curious about learning, about the changes that are happening in the industry, about the changes that can best impact their clients. What do you think, Jason?
Sure. Yeah. So couldn't agree more. And I'm so glad that, you know, I think Bill had a certain ethos around like those things that drew him to Vanguard. Obviously, he spent many years there. When we had our first phone call, I could kind of tell we had this very similar view on like how you could make financial advice better. And so I think that, you know, if you're not as an advisor, and our audience is predominantly financial advisors, I think a lot of the work we're doing is to try to make more people comfortable with this idea of starting their own practice if they don't already, serving a group of clients that they're passionate about taking good care of. And then if it's in their, you know, goals to grow, like giving them like tools and strategies and efficiency that helps them grow. So as an advisor, you know, I think some of the things from a curiosity perspective, you know, Bill talks about learning. I remember, you know, the way I kind of learned the independent financial advisor space is I read everything you could read on it. So every book, every magazine, every blog. I had a weird thing. I would actually read stuff backwards. So I don't know if I'm like, you know, I'm not really dyslexic, but I'd literally read things from the back page and then read them backwards to the front and then turn back, you know, read them the other way. There's a lot of emphasis, you know, for advisors, especially if they're kind of interested in growing and establishing their firm, that they get so focused on just that aspect of growth that they don't take the time sometimes to become masterful in their craft.
Yeah.
And I think that if you, although it's important, like you definitely have to become good at promoting, you know, yourself if you're a small business owner. But if you do that without, you know, absent the actual sort of tactical ability to really change your clients' lives for the better, you know, that's a really big mistake. You have to really be mastering both those things. And again, that yearning to get better and to learn is a huge part of that.
That's amazing. And you said something, taking the time to become masterful in your craft. When you're an advisor, you are literally doing everything, especially if you're a solopreneur or you're just starting your independent firm, right? You are the salesman, you're the marketer, you're trying to be the investment management manager and run your books at the same time. So how does an advisor take that time to master their craft? How did you do it?
You used a word earlier that is so important, curiosity. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the great things about this business is to be really good at it. You have to know a lot about a lot of things.
You do.
You have to stay very current on everything that's going on in the markets, everything that's going on in the macro economy, everything that's going on politically. You really today have to know what's going on socially. You know, there's so many aspects that, you know, make it such a vibrant craft, if you will. I think the key thing, though, in terms of, first of all, you never master it. So I've been in the industry for 35 plus years. I still feel like I'm learning something every single day. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things you do is you try to get as broad perspective from as many different practitioners as possible. You know, one of the advantages I had at Vanguard, which was a huge advantage, you know, most people think of Vanguard as this index monster, and we are. You know, we run a lot of index funds. But we also had a very profound and big active capability. So, but what's different is our active managers were all around the world. They were different firms. So I got to interact with 100 of the world's best investors on a regular basis and hear what they were thinking. And, you know, they'd come in and they'd debate, like, you know, one guy would love Starbucks, another guy would not like Starbucks. Somebody would love Microsoft, somebody else wouldn't like Microsoft. And just to hear those debates and those discussions on the investment side really helped me get a lot deeper. And then we could do the same thing in other aspects of it, you know, whether it was, you know, marketing, going out and talking to a lot of different people, whether it was technology, which, you know, again, a third of our people are technologists. And so I had to spend a lot of time out in the world, if you will, with different technology firms, consultants, and so forth. And again, always just trying to learn a little bit more so that you could bring it back to the company.
That's awesome. I think one thing that I picked up was the theme of mentorship. In a way, you were being mentored by having a seat at these conversations, right? And just listening to the dialogue between these people that were masters at their craft, right? So how important, I would say for both of you, is mentorship for the advisor that's growing or the firm that's trying to go from 50 million to 100? How important is it for them to have professionals that they can lean on for this advice to help them be better at what they do?
I'll take a first stab at it, but I'd say it's extraordinarily important and to choose those mentors wisely if you have the ability to make a choice. I say this so often, I almost feel like I can half take credit for it, but it's not my saying, but I use it a lot. It's that you become the average of the people you spend the most time with. So in this context, right, like if I'm aspiring to build a great financial planning practice, I should try to spend as much time with people that have either done it before, have done it bigger, have done it better, like people I really look up to. Yeah. It's sort of like the opposite of that, by the way. Something I see happening a lot is that misery loves company, right? So a great way to stay small, small-minded, small in terms of your ability to make an impact in people's lives is to surround yourselves with other people who are maybe pessimists and, you know, small-minded and don't think, you know, they always think the world's out to get them, sort of the proverbial kind of glass half empty. So if you can ever, you know, get into an audience of people that are better and smarter than you and have accomplished more than you, I mean, that's like one of the best cheat codes, you know, to really kind of achieve like your own goals at a more rapid pace.
That's awesome. What would you say?
You know, it's hard to add too much to that. I was very lucky and had incredible mentors along the way. And these were people who basically felt like they had an obligation to pay it forward. And, you know, somebody had taken an interest in them and given them a little shove. And, you know, the great thing about when you have a really good mentor is they give you insight that nobody else can give you, because you have this honest dialogue going on, and it's not evaluative the way, you know, a boss relationship might be, for example. You know, for me, having a couple of people who were 25 years experienced in the business, take an interest and sort of steer me in different directions, unbelievably helpful. Unbelievably helpful. And a lot of what I'm trying to do at this phase of my career is work with those kind of executives, what brought me to Jason. You know, I'd heard about him, I'd seen, you know, some of the work. And then when the venture capitalists connected us, I was like, this guy, I mean, first of all, he should have worked at Vanguard. How did I miss him? But he's building this incredible company.
Yeah.
And chance to get a, you know, to lean into that a little bit, share what I know, but I'm learning as much from him as I hope he's learning from me.
Absolutely.
I would say that the super flattering, by the way, but yeah, obviously, selfishly, we're learning a ton, like everybody on our entire team, you know, from our board to our executive team, and then the conversation you've been able to have broadly with our team. I think it's having great mentors means the world. And I know you and I have spent a lot of time together. We both talked to a lot of other advisors. It's the one downside to being like an independent RIA is you're not really, unless you form or you're part of like an intentional community, you're not part of another bigger, you know, entity. And so it's really an important thing for an advisor that's pursuing independence to make sure they have that community to belong to.
Absolutely. I think that you guys hit it on the head. Mentorship is not a one-way street, right? Like when you're investing in a company like Altruist or you have this relationship, both parties should be able to pour into each other. And you also touched on a very, very good point. It actually reminded me of something my dad used to say, right? If you are such person, don't worry about such thing. So I think that it's about principles, right? Making yourself the type of person, the type of business that other professionals want to be around. And let's touch on that for a minute, Bill. Principles. It's all about being the type of person that can do the daily thing that will lead to growth in your business. So speaking to all the advisors right now, right? What are some principles that you can impart on them to help them grow their businesses?
Yeah. So this is where I feel incredibly blessed to have grown up at Vanguard, because, you know, we were, our founder, Jack Bogle, really spent a lot of time on this. So I'd say a couple things. One, integrity should rule everything you do in your life, and including every aspect of your business. And doing the right thing is actually a great business strategy. Now, we used to talk about this in orientation with all our new people. Just do the right thing. And if you do that, good things are going to happen. And, you know, people will look at me and they go, yeah, everybody says that. And we're very, very serious about it. But I think one of the ways that it became real for a lot of us was spending a lot of time with our clients. Yeah. And, you know, Vanguard runs about $8 trillion today. So, you know, 25 million families invest with us. But getting on the phones and talking to them, reading the emails, actually exchanging letters. I did all this even as CEO because it kept me connected, because the most important principle for me, besides integrity in all things, is it's not my money. It's their money. And I think, frankly, a lot of advisors forget that sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you talk to them, they talk about the business and everything, and that's all great, but they've got to always come back to whose money it is. And they, in a sense, there's a sacred trust there between them and their clients, because, I mean, you know, we all know how hard it is to save and to invest. And, you know, you turn it over to somebody and say, here, I want you to help me achieve my life goals. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of trust.
Yeah.
That's a lot of trust. And so I think if an advisor can always be looking at the business, in a sense, inside out. It's not my money. It's my client's money. And then I'm going to act with the greatest level of integrity possible in terms of executing against, you know, executing my plan to help them meet their goals. It sounds really basic. It's really hard to do.
Yeah.
But if you do it, I think you really can be incredibly successful.
Jason, incredible. Principles. What are some principles that advisors of any level can kind of hone in on and try to focus on to help grow their businesses?
I loved what you just shared. Yeah. Like, it's awesome. It reminds me of, so I get like a very, you know, sort of like a millennial thing to say here. But so my therapist used to tell me, right, that like to do the right thing, it takes a lot of courage. And so sometimes people see I have a little tattoo on my forearm. It's in a spot where I can never escape it. It's there very intentionally. And it's a reminder to be courageous, because doing the right thing takes courage. Sometimes it's not financially rewarding. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's going to require you work long hours, right? But like doing the right thing is a huge payoff. So as a matter of principle, starting there is always a good idea, all the time. And in everything you do, both business and life, if you can remind yourself, like, do the right thing, be courageous, it's a good reminder. So I put it in ink on my arm. But like very practical things that advisors can and should be doing. I think that I try to get like a little bit tactical, right? I would say that as early as an advisor can in their career, have a really good idea of who you want to serve.
Yeah.
And what that relationship will be like, and communicate it very transparently. So I had a section on my website, I remember, like, you know, early in my career, where it would say, like, work with Jason. And then it was like the rules. It's like, hey, here's what I do for people. Here's very specifically who I work with. And here's what that relationship looks like. And then I made sure that everything I did, whether it was the name of my company, like, you know, promotional material, the way I thought about investment management, like all of those things were very much geared towards this very specific group of, you know, sort of ideal clients. It's very tempting early on to try to be all things to all people. But as a small business, it's almost always a better idea to have like hyper focus. Take your target market, make it very, very narrow. And you'll see even like bigger companies do that, you know, Altruist, which is still a small business. You know, we have a very narrow focus on like who we're serving. We're serving only RIAs and their clients. We've even taken the RIA audience and we've really vetted it down to like a very specific type of advisor, you know, that we call the modern advisor, you know, that's really kind of forward thinking and thinking about the business 20, 30 years in the future and like what that looks like, how it should look. Advisors should be doing those same principles. And I, you know, I was one of these people who followed like, you know, Bill and Vanguard's work well before we met. Big companies like Vanguard are doing that, like very, very focused, and not trying to be all things, all people. Instead, it was, you know, again, I think a company that was rooted in a very specific set of goals and ideals, and then executed better than anyone on those things. So advisors, big or small, early or late in their career, the more they can establish some really defined focus, put it in writing and share it with the world, they're going to find that they will start attracting, you know, investors that feel the same way, sort of those very kindred sort of, you know, relationships that are actually the most enjoyable and most valuable relationships to have, you know, in terms of business.
You know, if I can just add one thing on the practical side, because I love that, but it spurred a thought. You know, being very targeted is, you know, great business strategy. I think the other thing, you know, we certainly are trying to encourage advisors at Altruist, and we certainly talked a lot about it at Vanguard as well, is know where you add value. And, you know, there's this whole and we can get into this when we talk about the markets and so forth, but really understanding not only whom you're serving, but where you actually can add value in that service is really important. Because again, I see in the broader financial world, I see lots of firms doing things to do them, but they're not really adding value to the client at the end of the day. And I think that's an incredibly important concept.
I agree with you. It doesn't make sense to jog in place. And while you both say that this is practical advice, doing the simple thing is so hard, right? I think a lot of advisors get caught up in technology. I need this piece of technology and all these things to make me a viable candidate for my prospective client, when it's about these principles that you both have mentioned. So that's very, very good advice. I wanted to talk about practice management. Now, when you have the principles down, what's the best way to run your practice? And you and I talked earlier about investment management, which can be a challenge for a lot of advisors. How should advisors think about their portfolio construction and giving their clients the most optimal strategy to be successful?
Yeah, so this is where I usually am the most controversial in the room. So I'll say that right up front. But Because again, in my interactions with a lot of advisors over the course of my career, and I'm the same way, by the way, we love the markets and right. everybody wants to spend their time picking the best performing fund, picking the best stocks, mixing it together and just the right portfolio construction and so forth. But what I would tell you is that's not where the value add is. When you go back to my prior comment, everybody wants to spend all their time on picking the right fund or picking the right securities and mixing it all together into the right broader portfolio. That's not where you actually add value. Where you actually add value is in getting the right asset allocation and then implementing it in a very disciplined way. And let me give you, you know, just a couple of numbers on it. So if you look at any portfolio's return, 90%+ of that return is due to the asset allocation. Less than 10% is due to security selection, i.e. which fund or which stock, mm-hmm. or timing. Mm-hmm. And so the real value add is listening to the client's goals and saying, and their risk tolerances and saying, okay, I can create a diversified portfolio and I'm going to get the right mix of stocks, bonds, cash, and whatever else into a portfolio to meet those goals. That's where all the juice is. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing you do to really add value is you remain incredibly disciplined about that and you keep people to those goals. And this is really hard to do emotionally. You know, you'll see the stock market running up at, you know, double digits and your asset allocation, maybe it's drifting from 60% equities to 70 to 80.
Yeah.
And that rebalancing actually will come back and haunt you.
Yeah.
Or the more common thing that we've seen is the market, you know, has a real dip and people panic and they actually sell into that and reduce the equity exposure just when they should be increasing it. We've watched this over and over, cycle after cycle after cycle. And by the way, it happens with professionals as well as retail customers. And if you really want to add value as an advisor, being incredibly disciplined on that, it's literally more than 100 basis points a year of return just by being disciplined. Mm-hmm. Asset allocation, it's another 100 basis points of return. And then the third thing I would say, again, from just a very practical thing from a practice management standpoint, is get the tax location right, and you're adding another 100 basis points of right. return. So this is how an advisor can really overcome, if you will, all these other factors out there that are trying to detract from the portfolio's return.
Can we talk about that for a minute? Because I feel like we're in a very trendy time, right? Where professionals and clients alike are really looking at the dangling carrot over their head. Digital currencies, right? Different ways to invest, the next hot stock. And there's so much access to do it yourself, right? So with the stats that you just gave us, why is it so hard for us to just do that simple thing, right?
Well, I think unfortunately people want the shortcut. And the nature of the business is such that you need long periods of time for compounding, which to me is the most magical thing in the universe, to work. And everybody's looking for a shorter term solution. And, you know, look, we're a short term society. You know, we're bombarded by short term messages. But, you know, if you go back, Jason and I were talking about some of the great investors of their eras. So I had, again, the privilege of knowing John Neff, who, along with Peter Lynch, was probably the greatest portfolio manager of his era, late 80s, 90s. And over 30 years, he beat the index by 300 basis points a year, which is incredible. Okay? Lynch and a handful of others are the only other people who could have a similar track record. However, 10 of those 30 years, he trailed. And by the way, when he trailed by a lot.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, a third of the time people were going, who is this guy? Mm-hmm. And then if you looked at his work ethic, the guy read hundreds of annual reports every year. Every Sunday, he'd sit down and he'd read through another 25 annual reports because he knew his competition wasn't doing that. And for, you know, an individual, you know, anybody who's not doing this 24/7 to think that they're going to beat someone like that in the marketplace, It's not going to happen. There's not a chance in the long run. And this is why, you know, this is where the professional advisor to me makes such a huge difference, because they can, in a sense, work with their client to say, I know it's attractive. And if you're really, really drawn to it, okay, from a practical standpoint,
carve out 5% of the portfolio and say, here, you trade this, do whatever you want. And if you make a lot of money, great. And if you don't, but don't touch the corpus. Mm-hmm. I always tell the story, you know, my mother, when I started at Vanguard, she got so interested in the markets. And I would get phone calls just every week with the next big stock. And we'd be talking about them. And then finally, my father said, she's driving me nuts with this stuff. And I said, Dad, just take the core portfolio. We're going to index it. We're going to get the right asset allocation and give Mom her brokerage account. And it worked out great. You know, she traded away and I don't think she beat the market in the end, but she had a blast doing it. She stayed very informed. She's, you know, approaching 90 and she still talks about stocks every day. So it served a purpose. So, you know, it sounds again like a really simple thing, but it's something an advisor can work with a client. If you've got a client who's really interested in the markets in that way, that's a really smart way to help them.
That's awesome. You talked about just doing the work, right? And how there was no portfolio manager that was going to beat that man, right? And one of my old college football coaches used to say that you can't go around it, can't go over it, you can't go under it. You got to go through it and do the work, right? And one thing that you did that I admire was that from a CEO level, you're emailing clients and trying to stay informed. I know that that was a strong suit for you, right? Talk about how you spoke directly to your clients and how advisors can begin, especially in this age, to do that with all the mediums that we have.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think like at the very core, a lot of it is if you care, like you'll do these things. And if you have a very low ego, you'll do these things. If you have too big of an ego or if you don't care, you're probably at some point going to think you're above doing important work, you know, that really matters. And I think that, you know, certainly whether it's my work today at Altruist, I talk to hundreds of advisors all the time, you know, every once in a while I'll talk to clients of advisors, you know, it's actually really fun. And it does help to Bill's point, like it helps you understand better, you know, the value of the work that you're putting in and kind of the difference that it makes in people's lives. And it's like one of the most rewarding things you could ever do. As an advisor, you know, I felt like there was no such thing as over-communicating with clients. And today we have so many tools that allow us to communicate meaningfully with clients that there's very few excuses to not do that. So it could be something as simple as email, but there's also the ability to write in a blog. There's the ability to record a video. These are things that make it really easy. And I think the statistics are probably the same. I've seen this study like, you know, 20 times, but it's like the why people fire an advisor. And it's generally because they don't feel valued. An easy way to make sure that people feel valued is to actually value them and show it. You know, and a great way to show it is by taking the time to share, whether it's one-on-one or one-to-many. There's a lot of great tools to do that right now.
That's awesome. I have a question for you. We talk about the modern advisor, right? But Bill, what do you think the advisor of the future looks like?
Yes. Yeah, I think we're at a really interesting point right now in the industry. And obviously, a lot of what we're doing at Altruist is trying to help equip that advisor of the future, take things off his or her plate so that they can do the really important work. So I think it's going to be a combination of actually increased human touch. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean it has to be, you know, physical, but more human touch, more human interaction. And the only way that's going to happen is embracing technology that actually makes you more efficient and more effective at all the things that today take a lot of time. And so when I think about that advisor going forward, the person who really implements technology in a very thoughtful way and a very efficient, effective way, that frees him or her up to spend that time with the client and make the client feel really valued. And, you know, to Jason's earlier point, to me, that was one of the real ahas. And, you know, as I watched Vanguard get bigger and bigger, is our ability to do that was more challenging. And, you know, one of the things we do, we work with a lot of advisors as well, is we're trying to help them so that they can, you know, take as much burden off them so that they can spend that kind of time.
I love your perspective about the advisor of the future. What challenges do you think that the advisor of the future will face?
Well, I think it's interesting. We talked about like consumers and how easy it is. And I hate these consumers. I should back up and call them clients, right? Mm-hmm. Human beings, real people. They're very easily distracted because there's so many distractions out there. And it's actually like hard to get people to focus on the things that really matter financially. A big part of an advisor's job is doing that. advisors have the same thing, like access to way too many distractions. It's, you know, somewhat self-serving, but the more simple an advisor can keep their business, the better. Bill did a great job of explaining, you know, the investment management distractions that are easy for even professionals to spend way too much time on. But it's not uncommon for advisors to get sort of like, you know, just constantly distracted by shiny objects. And so it could be the latest technology. It could even just be like an article you read, right? You read about some other advisor and you feel really discouraged, like, wow, they're so much better and more successful. How could I ever be, you know, as good as they are? But if an advisor is going to stay hyper-focused on serving, again, a very specific client, if they can keep their tech stack simple and low cost, I think it's not lost on me. Those who don't know, I don't want to steal all of the learnings I've gotten or share all the learnings I've gotten for Bill, but I think this one's publicly known. But a huge part of Vanguard's flywheel, if you will, which was really surprising to me when I first heard it, was about delivering great performance, you know, to the end client. And I thought, wow, that's a really strange thing for an index fund company to talk about performance. Like, you know, you should never be chasing performance, but it wasn't actually chasing performance. The more I dug into it, it was really like they controlled the things you could really control, which yielded better performance for the customer, yeah. Right? So keeping costs really, really low, getting the customer to be focused on the things that really matter the most. As an advisor, like we have to do those same things. Like if we run a business that's really bloated, and I hear about this all the time from advisors, like they almost braggadociously want to share their tech stack with me. And it's like 8 vendors, yeah. You know, and there's this and this and this and this. And I'm thinking, one, that's got to be complicated and hard to manage. Two, there's no way you're using all of that for all of your clients. If you have that much need for technology, it means you're serving too broad of a client base. It's going to make it hard for you to grow and scale. And there's also a high likelihood you're overpaying. And those costs, I mean, in the end, again, leveraging a comment Bill made, it's not our money. It's our clients' money, right? And if we want to make sure that they get delivered the best possible outcomes, we have a responsibility to make sure that we're watching our, you know, P&Ls as well. Like those very much influence the outcomes of our clients. So it's just a myriad of possible distractions, but keeping it focused, keeping it simple, measuring costs, like being very intentional, are going to help advisors a lot avoid those mistakes.
For sure. You mentioned Vanguard's flywheel. Bill, I have to know what that is.
Yes. The great business author Jim Collins had this concept that when you create a business model that, in a sense, it's almost like a self-perpetuating cycle. So for us, it started with low cost. We could control it, which would lead to better performance. And if you combine that with great service, you had more loyal clients. And if you had more loyal clients, they tended to give you more assets to manage, and you tended to grow better organically. And as you grew organically, if you could take the efficiencies of scale from that growth and apply it back to the cost and service, you ended up, you know, lowering your cost, improving your service, mm-hmm. and the whole thing spins.
Yeah.
And the faster it spins, the better the business performs. And, you know, what's interesting, when we laid that concept out in front of our 15,000 crew members, our employees, people immediately got it. Like, they're like, yeah, that's what's different. And that's what makes this special. And we really tried to drive that concept home. And, you know, Vanguard started out with, you know, $1.8 billion under management in 1975. And, you know, today, as I said, it's running about $8 trillion, no acquisitions, wow. All been organic. And it's really that flywheel just spinning faster and faster.
That's awesome. That is awesome. And I'm in awe of it.
Yeah. And so like, and just to pile on, I someone who's admired Vanguard, you know, for a long time, I should say, like, also one of the most respected and also most respected within industry, but also has some of the most loyal and happy customers, right? Like most of us, when we think about, if there's something like finance publicly, most people get a little squeamish. Like there's a lot of like negatives that, you know, come with, yeah. Like, you know, bad broker behavior or high fees. Or what's really cool about, like, as an advisor, trying to make this practical to an advisor, if you look at like how successful a company like Vanguard has become, and they've done that without sacrificing the customer and their values and their integrity. In fact, it's quite the opposite. Like that flywheel is all about actually delivering a better value to the customer. As advisors, sometimes we aren't always thinking that way. Like I'll go on social media every now and again, and I'll see people debating the merits of different fee structures, you know? And I'm thinking like, what you should be trying to figure out is how to make the absolute best possible outcomes for your customers. Like, that's what should really matter. Like, what are the mechanisms and the means to do that? So great reminder sometimes from very large, successful companies that can very much be applied like to a brand new startup advisor and the way they think about how they're going to grow and build their business.
Yeah. So in your experience with running your businesses, what are your clients looking for? What are your customers looking for? We had the privilege of interviewing Preston McSwain in Boston. And he said that one of his clients said that it was transparency, simplicity, and peace of mind. What would you say it is in your experience running your businesses?
Wow. So I think there's a lot of things. I mean, I'm not going to like, you know, Preston's pretty darn good. So I would say exactly what Preston said. But the more like simple version for me is like, I find that most people, when they're hiring a financial advisor, they want to know that that person really cares about them and is going to put their interests first. Interestingly, the human advisor, like one of the things that we can do better than any like robo advisor or automated investing service is we can actually have one-on-one direct personal relationships with our clients. That's incredibly powerful because that's oftentimes what people want more than anything. Obviously, if you can marry that with like all of the great benefits of technology and automation, that's wonderful. But, you know, having the ability to deliver personal relationships at scale is like, you know, again, a huge cheat code for advisors. And they have to remember that that's the one advantage that technology cannot take away from them.
Yeah, agreed. What would you say, Bill?
So hard to add too much. I'll give you one little story, though.
Please do.
So first of all, what Jason said, you know, the word that comes to mind to sort of encapsulate all that, there's a trust factor. I think clients want to trust whether it's an institution or an advisor who has their money, and they really want there to be a deep level of trust. So that to me is incredibly important. So the great Wall Street Journal columnist, Jason Zweig, who's, you know, I read everything he writes, you know, voraciously because he's just so fabulous. A few years ago, he decided to go sort of try to figure out what do the people who've been successful as investors all have in common, many of whom work with different advisors and so forth. So he went to all places, Boca Raton. Because he figured everybody who was there had been pretty successful. And so he wanted to know their secrets around asset allocation, which advisors they picked, and, you know, how they performed. And he was very focused on performance in particular and what he could garner from that. And one client finally said to him, he goes, you know, you don't get it, Jason. He goes, what was important to me was working with somebody who got me to Boca. Mm. And I'm in Boca and I'm really happy. And that's what I want from my provider. And couldn't tell him what his asset allocation was, what his relative performance versus some benchmark was, or whether they had the latest cryptocurrency. Well, and back in those days, mm-hmm. it would have been, you know, a gold ETF or whatever. Yeah. It was somebody who knew deeply what his goals were and actually could affect the portfolio and the service in a way to get him to those goals.
Absolutely.
And, you know, to me, that's just such a critical thing.
Absolutely. It is so important for advisors to remember that the client should always be at the center of your business and the center of your practice. And I think that's a perfect story to kind of highlight that. I wanted to ask you both a question, and this is specifically for the emerging advisors. If you can give, let's say, two pieces of advice, one personal and one professional for the emerging advisor, what would these two pieces of advice be?
Wow, that's good. So I'll jump in and say that. So on the personal side, we talked a lot about this, but I think that like find a support system, especially we're saying, hey, if you're an emerging advisor, which likely means, hey, you're starting a practice, you're still in the fairly early stages of it, like having a support system is going to be incredibly important. That could be other advisors, it could be other entrepreneurs, you know, it could be family members, but you have to have someone who's going to, it's not all highs, right? There's highs and lows, and it can be very demoralizing if you don't have someone who believes in you and people to help with the journey. In terms of like the practical things, I think that I learned this from Ron Carson. He told the story, I think he's told it a number of times, but he told it once on one of our episodes where he said that, you know, he was at a stage very early in his career where he was super discouraged, right? He'd gotten to this point where like, you know, he was cold calling and door knocking and like not making any money, hadn't closed a new client in, I don't know if it was weeks or months. And he just was like about ready to quit the business. I think the story actually goes, he pulled up to a stoplight and saw someone operating a jackhammer and he thought, that looks like a pretty good job, you know, compared to like how discouraged he was in trying to build and form his firm. And then he got home and he realized like, stop feeling sorry for myself. Instead, he started just calling his clients. Mm-hmm. Didn't have anything to sell them. He just called them just to see how they were doing. He shared, I think, some of his, you know, goals, like, you know, like, hey, I'd like to be able to, you know, work with more clients and more clients like you and find ways to do more for them. And those clients actually rallied. And, you know, I think that became Ron's first book called Love Affair Marketing, which basically he just really, really took exceptional care of those early clients. So anybody who's in that early part of their career, you know, there's no better way to grow your business than just by taking, again, great care of, like showing an incredible amount of gratitude to those early clients. And then also, like, make sure they know that they can help you because they're going to be a lot more useful than any social post, blog post, like, you know, online marketing campaign, dinner seminar, whatever things you might think you might need to do to grow your business. Those early clients will be the ones who can actually influence it faster and more meaningfully than anyone else.
Agreed. 100%. Bill?
It's really hard to top that. I'd say just the addition would be ready for hard work, you know, which Jason implied. And I want to just double down on the take good care of your existing clients. You know, if you only get a handful to start with, work like crazy to make them happy. You know, it's interesting. And again, I get Vanguard was a little bit different than starting out, you know, as an independent advisor. But when we looked at the source of our new assets, 80% came from existing clients. And that's still true today, all these years later. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I say due to existing clients, it's either them giving us more assets or expanding within their families or being the entree to somebody else in a organic growth, from an organic growth perspective. We had to spend a lot less money on traditional cold calling and marketing and so forth because just by maniacal focus on make sure the existing clients well cared for, you were able to actually generate way better than average growth. And I think this, you know, it's interesting for me to rehear the Ron Carson story because I think he actually had it exactly right.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you both for joining me here on the Human Advisor Podcast. It's been a pleasure to sit and kind of intake all of this wisdom. And I'm sure a lot of advisors are going to enjoy this conversation. Before I let you go, Jason, Bill, please share where advisors can follow up with all the cool things that you'll be doing in the next couple of months.
I mean, for it's pretty easy. You know, if you follow Altruist, you pretty much know that's what I'm up to. So yeah, check us out on social. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. Get on our email list. And I think that as we think about like the next few years of Altruist, I really hope that like we're able to take these same principles we're teaching advisors, apply them internally. And then, you know, similar to how Vanguard had like this 80%, you know, sort of referred client rate, like I think that the community that we're building, it's really cool to see a lot of those same things play out. So not hard to find us, but check us out at Altruist on pretty much every social channel.
Awesome. What about you, Bill?
I'm with him. I have the privilege of being on Jason's board and being an investor in the company. And, you know, at this stage of my career, I'm pretty selective about what I'm trying to do. And I only want to work with great leaders who are doing innovative, disruptive things. And, you know, it's been a match made in heaven. I've been so privileged to get the opportunity to work with him and his team and our other board members. So I'm going to be along trying to help any way I can and happy to do whatever is necessary to see this business succeed. Because I think if we're successful at Altruist, we will enhance tremendously the ability of individual advisors to do more for their clients, which is really what it's been all about for me for the last 35 years.
The future is exciting.
It is.
The future is exciting.
Thank you, Dusarte. You're the best.
Thank you both. And thank you all for watching another episode of The Human Advisor. If you want to follow with everything that we're doing, like Jason said, please feel free to visit altruist.com/grow and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. I'm your host, Dusarte Yarnway, along with Jason Wink. And Bill McNabb, we appreciate you. We'll see you here again soon.
This was another episode of the Human Advisor Podcast. Visit thehumanadvisor.com for new episodes. And be sure to check out altruist.com to learn more about how Altruist is changing the face of finance. No commissions, no biases, digital everything, the way it should be.